Sox. I know you joined the White Sox in 1942.
Right. Well, Mr. Mack traded me over to Jimmy Dax for Krivich, Mike Krivich, and mm-hmm. center fielder, and a big pitcher by the name of Hallett, Jack Hallett.
I see. I know that the White Sox trained in French Lick, Indiana, and then Terre Haute, Indiana during the war. Do you have any interesting stories about spring training?
Oh, yeah. Well, the first year I was with them, we still went to the coast. We went to Pasadena. But 43, 44, and 45, mm-hmm. we trained at French. Mule Hass was his conditioning coach.
Yeah.
He used to run us, you know. And we had a lot of fun with him.
Mm-hmm.
We'd moan. Well, down there in French Lick, we had to run the snow a few times.
Oh, really? I see. See, that snow?
And Dax would stand out there all wrapped up, a blanket and everything. And we'd come up, and when we'd come up, we had it. It was a big hotel, you know, a resort hotel. They had those sulfur springs.
Mm-hmm.
So we'd take the baths afterwards. But anyway, Dykes would stand there with it and watch us run, you know. And they had this bridle path that we'd run on.
Mm-hmm.
And it was, it'd be 3 or 4 inches of snow. So when we'd come up to Dykes, we'd all stop and give him the Nazi salute. Dykes was a great guy to play for.
Uh-huh. So you were running in the snow then?
Right, yeah.
You're doing your conditioning in the snow.
Yeah, and the Cubs were there also, the mm-hmm. Chicago Cubs. And we played our exhibition games on a golf course.
Oh, really?
Mm-hmm.
So it's a golf
yeah,
course.
We didn't have a ballpark, see. We played on a golf course.
But what did they do? Did they set up a temporary backstop?
Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah, we just had a backstop set up in wide open spaces, you know, out on the golf course.
I know you joined the White Sox in 1942.
Right. Well, Mr. Mack traded me over to Jimmy Dax for Krivich, Mike Krivich, and mm-hmm. center fielder, and a big pitcher by the name of Hallett, Jack Hallett.
I see. I know that the White Sox trained in French Lick, Indiana, and then Terre Haute, Indiana during the war. Do you have any interesting stories about spring training?
Well, the first year I was with them, we still went to the coast. We went to Pasadena. But 43, 44, and 45,
mm-hmm.
we trained at French Lick. Not Terre Haute. I think Detroit trained at Terre Haute.
Oh, I see. Because I was talking with Jimmy Dykes.
Train at Terre Haute in 45. That's right. 43 and 44 at French Lick.
Yeah.
And 45 at Terre Haute. I remember. That's right. Uh-huh.
I see. Now,
Mule Hass was his conditioning coach.
Yeah.
He used to run us, you know. And we had a lot of fun with him.
Mm-hmm.
We'd moan. Well, down there in French Lick, we had to run the snow a few times.
Oh, really? I see. See, that snow?
And Dax would stand out there all wrapped up, a blanket and everything. And we'd come up, and when we'd come up, we had it. It was a big hotel, you know, a resort hotel, and they had those sulfur springs.
Mm-hmm.
So we'd take the baths afterwards. But anyway, Dykes would stand there with it and watch us run, you know. And they had this bridle path that we'd run on,
mm-hmm.
and it was it'd be 3 or 4 inches of snow. So when we'd come up to Dykes, we'd all stop and give him the Nazi salute. Dykes was a great guy to play for.
Uh-huh. So you were running in the snow then?
Right, yeah.
You're doing your conditioning in the snow.
Yeah, and the Cubs were there also, the mm-hmm. Chicago Cubs. And we played our exhibition games on a golf course.
Oh, really?
Mm-hmm.
So it's a golf
yeah,
course.
We didn't have a ball.
Sox. I know you joined the White Sox in 1942.
Right. Well, Mr. Mack traded me over to Jimmy Dykes for Krivich, Mike Krivich, and mm-hmm. center fielder, and a big pitcher by the name of Hallett, Jack Hallett.
I see. I know that the White Sox trained in French Lick, Indiana, and then Terre Haute, Indiana during the war. Do you have any interesting stories about spring training?
The first year I was with them, we still went to the coast. We went to Pasadena. But 43, 44, and 45, mm-hmm. we trained at French Lick. Not Terre Haute. I think Detroit trained at Terre Haute.
Oh, I see. Because I was talking with Jimmy Dykson.
Train at Terre Haute in 45. That's right. 43 and 44 at French Lick.
Yeah.
And 45 at Terre Haute. I remember. That's right. Uh-huh.
I see.
Mule Hass was his conditioning coach.
Yeah.
He used to run us, you know. And we had a lot of fun with him.
Mm-hmm.
We'd moan. Well, down there in French Lick, we had to run the snow a few times.
Oh, really? I see. So you're down snow?
And Dykes would stand out there all wrapped up, a blanket and everything. And we'd come up, and when we'd come up, it was a big hotel, you know, a resort hotel. They had those sulfur springs.
Mm-hmm.
So we'd take the baths afterwards. But anyway, Dykes would stand there with it and watch us run, you know, and they had this bridle path that we'd run on.
Mm-hmm.
And it was, it'd be 3 or 4 inches of snow. So when we'd come up to Dykes, we'd all stop and give him a Nazi salute. Dykes was a great guy to play for.
Uh-huh. So yeah. You were running in the snow then?
Right, yeah.
You're doing your conditioning in the snow.
Yeah, and the Cubs were there also, the mm-hmm. Chicago Cubs. And we played our exhibition games on a golf course.
Oh, really?
Mm-hmm. We set a...
I know you joined the White Sox in 1942.
Right. Well, Mr. Mack traded me over to Jimmy Dykes for Mike Krivich, and mm-hmm. center fielder, and a big pitcher by the name of Hallett, Jack Hallett.
I see. I know that the White Sox trained in French Lick, Indiana, and then Terre Haute, Indiana, during the war. Do you have any interesting stories about spring training?
The first year I was with them, we still went to the coast. We went to Pasadena. But 43, 44, and 45,
mm-hmm.
we trained at French Lick. Not Terre Haute. I think Detroit trained at Terre Haute.
Oh, I see. Because I was talking with Jimmy Dykes, and
Train at Terre Haute in 45. That's right. 43 and 44 at French Lick.
Yeah.
And 45 at Terre Haute. I remember. That's right. Uh-huh.
I see.
Mule Hass was his conditioning coach.
Yeah.
He used to run us, you know. And we had a lot of fun with him.
Mm-hmm.
We'd moan. Well, down there in French Lick, we had to run the snow a few times.
Oh, really? I see. So you're down snow?
And Dykes would stand out there all wrapped up, a blanket and everything. And we'd come up, and when we'd come up, we had it was a big hotel, you know, a resort hotel, and they had those sulfur springs,
mm-hmm.
so we'd take the baths afterwards. But anyway, Dykes would stand there with it and watch us run, you know, and they had this bridle path that we'd run on,
mm-hmm.
and it was, it'd be 3 or 4 inches of snow. So when we'd come up to Dykes, we'd all stop and give him a Nazi salute. Dykes was a great guy to play for.
Uh-huh. So you were running in the snow then?
Right,
yeah. You're doing your conditioning in the snow.
Yeah, and the Cubs were there also, the mm-hmm. Chicago Cubs. And we played our exhibition games on a golf course.
Oh, really?
Mm-hmm.
So it's a golf course.
Yeah, we didn't have a ballpark, see. We played on a golf course.
But what did they do? Did they set up a temporary backstop?
Yeah, we just had a backstop set up in wide open spaces, you know, out on the golf course.
I see. He said that after the spring thaw came and the snow melted, that the field was underwater and you had to practice in the auditorium
at
the hotel in sneakers.
That's
right. Was there anything specific
about
that?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, the water was so deep out there you couldn't do anything for quite a while. It's amazing that we got in as good a shape as we did because we weren't, I don't think we were down there about 30 days.
Mm-hmm.
And you didn't, we played Detroit, and there's only a couple other clubs we had to play. But we did manage to get in pretty good shape.
When you were in the auditorium, did you play basketball?
They had basketball. I never was interested in basketball.
Uh-huh.
And
or did you actually throw a baseball around in the
oh,
auditorium?
Yeah. Oh, sure. Yeah.
Just play pitch and catch?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I see.
And a little pepper, that's all you can do, and run.
I see. That must have been quite something.
Take calisthenics.
Yeah.
But we managed to get in pretty good shape.
Good. Do you remember? I'm sorry.
Of course, we were limited in players, you know, because mm-hmm. a lot of the good players in the service. Mm-hmm. We had the 4Fs and the older guys and hardship cases and whatnot, you know. That.
What about travel restrictions? Do you remember any anything special about traveling was, train rides?
Traveling was tough. Mm-hmm. You had to... Well, when we used to, when in the old days of train travel, everybody had a lower berth. Mm-hmm. And they used the upper berth to put, the porter wouldn't make it up, and you put your bag and your coat up there, you know.
I see.
But during the war, we had to use uppers and lowers. So the guys that played every day, they slept downstairs. Mm-hmm. The extra men and the pitchers that weren't pitching slept upstairs.
Without the uppers, I see.
The guys that they were going to use a pitcher and maybe a relief pitcher, they sleep downstairs. Mm-hmm. Because we only had a couple of cars, you know.
What about blackouts in cities? I mean, of course, I was born in 1945, so I don't know. But were they? Did the blackouts stop after 42 or 43?
I don't. I can't remember that. It didn't seem to. I don't think it affected us. Well, see, we being with the White Sox, it wouldn't be blackout anyway, you know.
Right. Well,
I don't remember on the East Coast whether they had any or not. I've forgotten. That's been a long time ago. Yeah. That's been almost 20 years. Yeah, did we?
We had them all during the war.
At the ballpark?
No.
No, that's what I mean. We played ball games at night.
Yeah.
But you mean, didn't they play? Did last up through 44 and maybe even into 45.
Oh, we couldn't understand it. We had them here. We rushed like mad, you know, for shelters and whatever. And we never, all the time we were out.
Oh, that's okay. Go ahead. That's fine.
All the time
Please.
We were out there, I didn't realize that. All the time we were out there, we never had a air raid alert at all.
I see.
Those 5 summers.
Well, we had a great time in Chicago. We had a nice, real nice couple, you know. Mm-hmm. And we were fortunate enough to stay at a hotel where they had, it was an apartment hotel. Mm-hmm. We got one of the officials of the club knew this one fellow that he played golf. He was, I guess he was about retiring age. So he had a place out at Olympia Fields Golf Course. So he'd go out there in the summer.
Yeah.
So my wife and I got that apartment every year, and we sublet it, you know, and it was a really nice one. And we had Joe Haynes, who finally, he became a vice president of Minnesota, his wife's party. Mm-hmm. His wife and her brother own it. And we had...
Oh, so he married into the Griffith family?
Right, right.
Oh, I see.
And Skeeter Webb and his wife was there, the shortstop.
Mm-hmm.
And
Tresh.
Mike Tresh, Tommy Tresh's dad.
Mike and
our daughter were the same age. They used to, there's a little park not too far away. They used to play together. But
oh, really?
Johnny Humphreys was there. And Orville Grove was there a while.
No, Orville.
He was around.
He married a girl from Chicago, and they only lived about 2 blocks
from
us.
Yeah.
I see.
So there were 5 or 6 that was real close there. Oh, so
and Luke Kaplan wasn't too far. Of course, he went into service in 44.
Mm-hmm.
But we really had a nice time. And in those days, you had 7 to 14 night games. I forgot. I believe they had 14 at that time. The girls get babysitters, and we'd go out after the game. We'd all go to the same place, the whole ball club, you know.
Oh, really?
In that area. I mean, mm-hmm. all of them in that, maybe 10 couples, you know.
I see.
So we got along good, and you had your meat rationing, you know.
I was going to ask you about food or gas.
So the girls, so we'd get some steaks. Well, a lot of hotels took pretty good care of us
mm-hmm.
on that. They saved back some steaks for the ball club because the ball club has been giving them good business for years, you know.
Sure.
But the girls would eat with each other,
mm-hmm.
and they'd eat out, and they'd save up their points. So when we got home, we'd have...
Oh, fine.
We'd do pretty good.
Did Butcher show you give you special favors because
as I say, this whole group of us traded a place on 71st Street, and everything about the war was much easier in Chicago than Philadelphia. I mean, just everything. And you'd take your fat back, and they'd give you so many points. Like, say, if I don't know what meat was, it varied from 8 to maybe 16 points. But maybe when you had rendered that fat, that they'd give you 3 points a pound back.
Oh, I see.
See, because you actually weren't getting straight meat. Now, whether they did it any place here in Philadelphia, I did not know. But meat did not seem to be as scarce out there. And certainly clothing wasn't, because our daughter was tiny then. And I just waited until I got to Chicago to buy her summer clothes, and then I buy her winter clothes before I left, and even for her toys for Christmas, and I haven't sent home. We did not have...
Marshall Field is a great store out there, you know.
Oh, really?
And
tremendous.
We just did
department
not
store.
Have it. It was completely different.
Oh.
They didn't feel it. You didn't notice it as much out in Chicago as you did on the East Coast.
Mm-hmm.
Now, we had no trouble with gasoline.
Oh, you were late.
I know, but I mean, three people would use one car,
mm-hmm.
and you'd pool your gas so you had enough gasoline, you know.
Oh, so the ball players would travel to the ballpark
together,
and
uh-huh.
Mm-hmm. So we'd try to live together. Just
about four of them in a car, you know.
Or four or five.
Yeah,
cars.
Five, sometimes five.
And you see, you only got about 3 gallons a week, so that gave you 15. And if we went out to eat, we ate in a group.
We'd ride together, you know.
Oh, I see.
Use one car for three
sense.
Couples,
sure.
You know. So we made out all right.
Good. Fine.
I mean, it was just all the difference in the world. I mean, out there, I couldn't understand. Of course, I could understand about the air raids, because nationally, New York and Washington, Philadelphia were more likely to get the air raids. But I couldn't understand about everything else being so hard to get here.
Mm-hmm.
You didn't seem to have the same, like, children's clothing. I didn't see why that would make a difference, you know, in Chicago and here. But it did. But of course, we were all concerned about the war, but outside of that, why, we had a grand time. I hate to leave it. We went to a pennant winner and I cried.
Well, I've been an avid Red Sox fan since I was that tall, and after we're done taping here, I'd like to ask a few questions about the 46 Red Sox. Thanks, Mrs. Moses.
I didn't realize you had
No, this is fine, because this is the type of material I'm interested
yeah.
in. You were known as an excellent hitter. You've accumulated over 2,000 hits in your major league career. What pitchers during the war were the toughest for you to hit against? Do any stand out in your mind?
No, not during the war so much.
Before
the war, I can remember a few.
Sure.
Yeah.
What was it like to hit against a guy like Newhouser?
Well...
Or did you have an easy time with
him? I hit Newhouser pretty good.
I see.
I really did. John Allen gave me a lot of trouble. His fastball moved so much.
It did?
Yeah, and he was mean. If you got a good swing, he wanted to knock you down. Whether he hit the ball or not,
he
was tough. He was, Doug, if like they do today, you see him with that back spike digging, he'd knock him right out of there.
Uh-huh.
We had a lot of guys do it. Ted Lyons do it too.
Oh, really?
Yeah, they didn't. Pitcher's attitude was a little different than what it is today.
Uh-huh.
Of course, they could get away with it. I mean, there was no restrictions. Now, they make something out of it, you know.
So you consider pitchers as being meaner back in those days?
Get away with it.
Yeah,
pitcher can't. There's some pitchers. Well, Early Wynn would. He'd flatten you.
Uh-huh.
You know, there's some of them. You hear of some throwing matches now, you know.
Right.
But a lot of that's called by the manager.
Right.
Yeah, some of these managers. A guy like Stanky, I know he had them throwing it. And Alan Dark, Mr. Dark, I think, would
Gene
do
Mock
that too. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Right.
And they accused Gene Mock of it, you know.
Right.
And I wouldn't doubt it.
Now, you say Alan was tough. Did his fastball tail end? Did it go down?
You didn't know which way it was going.
Oh. Did he?
He just threw the ball hard, and it was like hitting a brick.
Uh-huh.
You know, he threw
such
a heavy ball. Similar to Dick Farrell. That was a real good relief pitcher with the Phillies back when I was coaching with the Phillies.
Yeah.
Had the same type of fastball.
I see.
Well, you look at Johnny Allen's record. He had a tremendous record.
Yeah, he was a good
pitcher. 17-3, 15-1. You know, he was tough to beat.
Uh-huh.
And I think his attitude had a lot to do with that. He just hated to lose. He didn't want anybody to get a hit off him.
Uh-huh.
You know?
I see.
He was a terrific competitor.
Do any other pitchers stand out in your mind?
There were a lot of good pitchers. You know, Feller, Newhouser, Trout. You know, everybody had two or three good ones.
Mm-hmm.
And, during the war, when you went into Washington, it was tough. You had
those
knuckleball pitchers.
Oh, right. The Hefner,
Wolf, Nigling, and Leonard. And you know who caught all of them? Rick Farrell.
George Case was telling me about that. Of course, Case played in those teams.
Yeah.
Did you have trouble with the knuckleballers?
Everybody had trouble with knuckleball. I don't know of any hitter that likes to hit at a knuckleball.
Oh, really?
Screwball, knuckleball, well, they're freak pitches, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And they're tough on hitters.
Who is the...
They're a little tougher to adjust to than the fastball and the change and the curveball.
Mm-hmm. Who for you was the toughest knuckleballer to hit? Which of the four?
Niglin.
Niglin?
Mm-hmm. Because he had a pretty good fastball to go with his knuckleball.
Oh, so he could set you up.
Yeah. Where Wolf and Wolf's knuckleball broke more than anybody's.
Mm-hmm.
But he didn't have quite as good control of it as Leonard.
I see.
Heppner's knuckleball didn't do too much. He had a fastball and curveball. He didn't use it as much as the other three guys did.
Yeah,
but Leonard and Wolf threw knuckleballs kind of like, like what's your name? Wilhelm. Yeah, like Wilhelm. They threw it all the time, huh?
I see. I understand Niglin had some bad knees and used to make them, trick knees and they used to pop back in.
Well, I didn't know about that. I didn't get to know him that well. I know he was the toughest of the four for me to hit.
Uh-huh. I see. You led the league in doubles, I believe, in 1945,
mm-hmm.
triples in 1943. Did you find Comiskey Park a nice park for hitters?
Tough.
It is tough.
Yeah, it ruined my batting average when I went there. I went there and I had an average of about my first 7 years in Philadelphia, somewhere between 318 and 20.
That's terrific.
And after 4.5 years there, it was an even 300.
Uh-huh.
So you see, it was 2 years I was hurt.
Mm-hmm.
When I went over, Dice wanted me to start running bases. You know, he said, in that big ballpark, and we had a defensive team. We didn't mm-hmm. score many runs.
Okay.
So he told me, he said, you're on your own now. I want you to steal whenever you get a chance, because we got to steal runs over here. So they come tough in this ballpark.
Sure.
And back in those days, the wind blew in all the time. And there's a big scoreboard there now
mm-hmm.
that pulls it out in center field, you know.
Yeah.
But you could hit a ball. The balls I'd hit in Philadelphia for home runs and doubles, they'd go foul.
Yeah.
You know, they'd hook foul.
Because of the wind.
Because of the wind. And the balls you hit in right center and left center,
mm-hmm.
they'd hang up there until somebody caught them, you know.
Oh, I see.
Where in a normal ballpark, it'd fall in there. So it had to. It took me... a little while, the last year I played there, I hit over 300 all year.
Mm-hmm.
But I stopped pulling the ball. I hit everything back through the middle and the left field.
I see.
And that's what made Applin a right field hitter. He told me about that one. Well, he was on me. He said, you keep pulling that ball, you know, and hit the ball hard, and I'd come back.